Episode number 208 of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by GoToMeeting.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of The Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China's raising rates again. GDP is downgraded in the U.S., down about 1.5% by some of the major analysts. Earnings season starts off on a really bad foot, but confidence is up and inflation is in check. All this and two great guests, Kevin Depew and Fausto Puglisi, coming up on episode 208 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So thanks for joining me on episode number 208. It's the beginning of earnings season, as you well know. Alcoa, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Google came out and all pretty much stunk up the carpet. I mean, you can't see, I don't remember actually seeing an earnings season start off so poorly against expectations. And some of the things that are happening are that expectations are high, of course, because we've seen a significant market run lately and into earnings season. Oftentimes when you see that maybe investors get a little ahead of themselves. Look at what happened with Google. Amazing how one of the biggest components of their drop in earnings or their miss on earnings was because of increased employment. They had to hire a lot of people to expand. And somehow, some way, the analysts in their infinite wisdom did not come up with this wonderful positive benefit that actually would be negative to earnings. You know, one of the big things that has been really great, this is a double-edged sword, but really great for corporate America is the fact that they have kept their overhead down because they have limited need for additional employees right now. And that's the other side where we see the negative side of this is that the employment situation is not getting a lot better. In fact, last week, the employment situation on initial claims was far worse than anticipated. So, you have this balancing act right now that you do not want to hire a lot more people because if you can keep your costs down, your earnings, your net earnings will do very well or at least stay where they were. And if you have any kind of slippage or increase in revenues, you can kind of adjust. But once you start hiring people with the idea that you're going to have an expansionary move moving forward or a better revenue stream moving forward, and that does not come true, what's going to happen in the short term is you're going to be punished dramatically by investors. Google down about 8%, 8% on Friday. We saw an initial bounce in Bank of America when they came out with their earnings. They missed by, I think, 10 cents. They thought they were going to have about 27 cents of earnings. They came out 17. Really horrible EPS number, in my opinion. And JP Morgan, which came out with a better number, really when you got down and you really kind of looked at what was going on in between all the different accounting tricks and all the things that I put in to make it look better, there was a lot of loan revisions, or I should say not loan revisions, but loan benefits from loans, write-downs, and less retention, if you will, for bad loans that they were able to now say, hey, you know what? We don't have to do that as much anymore because we're not seeing as much bad loans really come on the books or come off the books. And what we can do is we can actually kind of make that look better, make the earnings look better because we don't have to reserve for that right now. We also saw, of course, Alcoa miss on revenues. So when you take this earnings season, just the first week, which is the kind of the lead week, in total, it looked unimpressive. And I think markets felt that. I think investors were scratching their head and not a lot of volume when it came to either of the days that sort of moved a little bit up in the markets. And don't forget, we have a lot of technical factors that are going on here with 50-day moving averages that most indices are very close to or right on top of. We also have an inverse head and shoulders pattern on, let's say, the Russell 2000. We also have a break of some support levels that is very close to where they are now. And on top of that, we still have the notion that QE2 is around, especially when we look at what happened on Friday. We saw the CPI number come out pretty much in line. Nothing major except for, of course, if you add back in food and energy, thereby, once more, putting into concrete the idea that Bernanke and gang will finish out their quantitative easing process. So when you, again, look at, well, China is having an inflation problem. Singapore, did you see Singapore? Singapore's GDP was 23% quarter over quarter on an annualized basis. You know, you look on the quarter over year period. Wow. Wow. It was only supposed to be about 12. 12 and they come up 23. I mean, what amazing number. So I think that they're going to be slowing down. There's been some fighting going on once again with currency issues, and Geithner is starting to get in the news again about, you know, saying that countries should be held to account their respective currency levels dependent on their deficit or surplus and their total amount of account values that they have in terms of the sovereign basis. And what I find to be interesting is that it seems that he says that everybody else needs to, but we don't. But now what that's happening is that the rest of the world is starting to point fingers here saying, hey, you know what? We wouldn't have this inflation problem if you guys wouldn't be spending so recklessly. If you guys wouldn't be pouring money into the markets like you've been doing. If you guys would, you know, U.S. would and developed countries would stop with the absolute ridiculous levels of printing money, we wouldn't have this inflationary problem and we wouldn't have this discrepancy in the valuations of currencies. But that kind of goes in one ear, out the other, because Geithner is a one message kind of guy. So next week, we're going to have to really be careful and watch a lot of earnings coming in. We're going to have to be very careful and watch what is happening with regard to the total level of, you know, earnings misses or surprises on the upside. How are revenues playing out? What are margins? Everybody wants to see margins right now. Margins are important because you can have all the wonderful things happening, but if there is a degradation and a starting of a shrinkage of margins due to input costs, that's going to be the real signal when it comes to, is the inflationary situation that we've been talking about showing up? It's hard to imagine that it won't in certain areas, but is it showing up? And I will tell you also that we are very much on guard. One of the things that we did last week was put on at the low value of the VIX right now. And when you hear a lot of players saying, oh, the VIX doesn't matter. Anytime somebody says it doesn't matter, you got to start scratching your head and wondering, doesn't matter. No. Historically, it's always mattered. All of a sudden, it doesn't. So I think what you need to look at is, you know, how is the volatility going to play out? Right now, the VIX was sub 16 at the end of last week. Even with some of the negative days, there was, a bit of a rolling effect from one month to the next on the options expiration. That being the case, take advantage of it. Maybe look at some calls on the VIX. We picked up the May 20s on the VIX, and they were about $1.80 to $1.90 when we looked at them, and the VIX was pretty low, and that was a pretty good price because if you think about just the VIX coming back a little bit, that could move that needle pretty fast for that option. There's only 4 weeks left for that option. But still, if there is some volatility in the markets, if we see a disappointment really starting to roll over into a lot of securities, and we see the continuation of the rest of the world really being on a inflation alert, and oil continue to climb because the dollar gets crushed, I think that you may see a small amount of volatility or a reasonable amount of volatility come back. All is not clear when it comes to Europe and the Middle East, and all is clearly not absolutely done when it comes to Japan. Japan, we have seen already significant amount of companies, particularly in the technology area, coming out with commentary saying that they have a real problem with fulfilling orders due to the March dateline when it comes to Japan. Many companies are still offline. Many people are still without power. And to make things worse, there's still aftershocks. Now, sure, Japan may be holding up the yen. They may be pushing money into the market in the hundreds of billions of dollars, and the G7 may be doing the same thing for the yen. But at the same time, if you think about the companies that are reliant on manufacturing that cannot get their parts from the manufacturers and from the factories, how are they going to have their profits hold up? On Friday, we saw this with Cirrus Logic, stock we recently purchased, to be honest with you. Small amount, very small amount. But at the same time, we saw them drop about 6 or 7 or 8% right off the bat when they came out with a mid-quarter update, citing that their earnings would be in the mid part of the range, but there was a concern they had over their ability to meet demand because of the situation in Japan. That's a heads-up warning. That should be kind of an alert. And the other thing is the rotation that we've seen lately into the healthcare utilities, the staples, and out of materials and energy, out of telecom, out of the technology. There's a clear and just an absolute clear rotation over the last 12 weeks into the much more defensive positions compared to the, let's call them growth-oriented, from the growth to the value. That is never a really great sign for the risk, quote-unquote, risk-on trade. That's not a great sign to say that there's a lot of bullishness out there. I think there's a lot of confusion right now. So consider a little bit, you know, right now of a little bit of a warning time that may be lifted. But with all the distributions days we've recently seen and the updates on very mild volume at best, even options expiration on Friday was very weak comparatively. Volume was horrible. Should be 40 or 50% better on, you know, really if things are strong. And on an options expiration, we see a lot higher. We're talking about maybe a 10% rise in volume on options expiration day. Pretty lame. Consider that. And, you know, just keep that in mind, because I think right now is one of those times that we can go either way with this market, and it could happen very quickly. So just a little word of warning, keep your eye on the ball for these earnings. I think that's really going to be play out really in a very interesting way this quarter. Margins are the big issue. Revenues beats are the big issue, and the outlook when it comes to what is being said with relation to not only China, but oil prices, input prices, as well as global demand. How about we get to the guests? What do you think about that? Our first guest today is Kevin DePue. He's the editor-in-chief, the big guy, the man that gets things done over at Minionville, a great site not only for information, news, and commentary, but also for education. So, Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for being here. There's a lot of things I want to go over with you. It's been a while since you've been on, although you and I talk back and forth quite often. What is kind of like your give me the overview of what's going on in the maybe the global, and then break it down to the local market situation.
Well, God, if we go back to when markets bottomed in March of 2009, nobody there were very few people who were correct on that. I was looking for another low below 666 on the S&P 500. We didn't get that, but by July, a lot of the DeMarc indicators indicated that things were breaking out. So, you know, we only had a couple of months there where things were going against us. But globally, I mean, not a lot has changed. We still have a lot of private debt has been transferred to governments. So there's the remaining sovereign debt issue. There are, you know, basically all you can do is have economic activity to grow out of that, or there's going to be defaults along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I mean, from my perspective, I don't care about that. I know that's anathema to a lot of people. You know, I don't care about the municipal situation. In fact, I was looking at some data yesterday, and that there's another supply wave of municipal debt being, you know, coming in the U.S. later this year. That's going to be a little bit of a problem, but you know, there aren't the rampant mass defaults that people had expected, that even I had expected at one point. And the bottom line is that there's now dispersion in the markets, where it's not the case that every single stock looks identical. If you go back to 2006, 2007, everything looked alike.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter if you were looking at soybeans, if you were looking at KB Homes, Toll Brothers, Intel, every single financial asset looked exactly alike.
Yeah.
After the bottom, you started to see things change, and you started to see companies. You know, it's not the case that every company out there is AIG or Enron.
Right.
And that's the way I believe a lot of people are treating everything and focusing on the global macro. I don't care about global macro anymore. What I care about are individual stocks, because there are companies out there who are doing things that are important and that are economically viable and that will allow them to make money. And, you know, I don't know if the stock market as a whole returns, you know, the 8 to 9% a year that people expect, but there are going to be individual situations within the stock market that certainly return much more than that.
Yeah, no, you mentioned this whole idea of dispersion. There still is a great degree of correlation, though, risk on, risk off. I mean, I've been tracking and I've been talking about it, and my listeners are probably sick of me talking about this whole correlation and almost daily movement of, in particular, the dollar euro to the equity markets and oil. It's like that's the favorite trade right now. You know, overnight you see something like the euro either ramping or dropping, and then markets open in Europe, it changes direction. The markets open here, it changes direction. And as things get either at a turning point that is a support level, whatever, they just turn. It's almost like they're borrowing it and just shoving it into equities and then just bleeding it out a little bit afterwards. Have you noticed that?
Well, what I see instead is that, and I agree with to an extent, if we're looking at it on a day-by-day basis,
yeah,
that yes, it appears that, you know, okay, the S&P 500's down, you know, 0.25%. A lot of the stocks are down anywhere from 0.2 to 0.3%, you know, right in that range. And so on a day-to-day basis, it looks like, oh, yeah, well, S&P's down 0.25%, Marvell Technology Group's down 0.25%. But when what I bring to the table via DeMarc indicators is that the counts in DeMarc are no longer the same. And as an example of that, Marvell, I just picked that one because I happen to have it on my screen. That's actually going to give a DeMarc buy signal in the next few days.
I'm not going to interrupt you because I am going to interrupt you because I need to know something, okay? A couple of things. You say DeMarc indicators change. Now, let's back it up because I think this is important. Now, DeMarc indicators are, I'll call it, a high-end indicator system, very mathematically inclined in terms of the creation of them. You don't have to really know the math behind it necessarily to understand what they are. And they point to what? Exhaustion points and on both a buy and a sell level, right?
Right. If these are the best way to describe them are price exhaustion techniques that incorporate aspects of momentum and aspects of trend following and looking for points where trends become exhausted. So that when everybody is piling into something and buying it, we're selling it. When everybody's selling something, we're buying it.
Yeah, but hopefully you're not doing it, obviously, at the wrong time. The point is you have to get... No, what I'm saying is it's not just a contrary thing. Hey, this is going up, so I'm selling it. It's a little bit more than that, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. These are the patterns are things that Tom DeMarc found back in the early 70s, comparing closing prices to closing prices and looking for patterns in the way securities prices moved. And he found that there were a lot of patterns, and notably the one that formed the basis of his work was called TD sequential.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two components of TD sequential. The first is the setup phase, and the second is the countdown phase. The setup phase just looks for a close. If it's a sell setup, for example, it's comparing a close to the close four price bars earlier. And it's robust across daily, weekly, monthly, hourly, intraday time frames.
Mm-hmm. And then what happens is that you get the next phase. What happens then?
Well, what we're looking for are 9 consecutive closes, either above or below the close four price bars earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, that's once you get that 9, that's the setup phase. After the 9, then you can begin looking for the real trend, which is sequential. The 9 captures the momentum phase when something goes up. For 9, you know, it looks like it's going up on 9 consecutive closes, greater than the close four price bars earlier,
mm-hmm.
or it's going down. That's the momentum phase, up or down. But the true trend is found in the countdown phase, where you're comparing the close to the high or low 2 bars earlier. Those don't have to be consecutive, and it can last for a long time. And there are a lot of other components to it. That's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but in a nutshell, that's how you're counting the market.
And there's different ways to do it. I know, you wrote a book on this, right?
No, I just write about it at Minnieville.
Someday. I think you wrote a book on it. Okay, I'm just leaving it at that. Now, here's what I have a question on. I have two questions, actually. You mentioned that the DeMarc indicators are showing something differently. Here's my question. With all that's gone on recently with external pushing and pulling on equities, risk assets, currencies, commodities, have the DeMarc indicators changed their basic, the TD sequential as an example, changed its usage at all? Or are you still kind of utilize the basic formulation?
Well, it's like everything else. There's no holy grail for the market. And so over the past 35 years that Tom's been working this, there are other indicators that he's come up with to help. You know, basically what we're looking for are, you know, I'll use the example. My background is in horse racing handicapping. Is that, okay, you go to the track, and let's say, you know, Keeneland Racecourse opened in Lexington. Before it changed to a polytrack surface, it was dirt, and it was a speed-favoring surface. So, you know, that was what its reputation was, that a horse who broke on a lead would tend to win no matter what their odds were, because it was just hard to make up ground for the other horses due to the configuration of the track. Well, over time, the public becomes aware of this, and they're like, oh, well, this horse is obviously a speed horse. We'll bet this one. And so the odds on those speed horses get compressed. And so then they become no value. Then you're looking for, well, how can I beat the bias? So the same thing happens in capital markets where, you know, over the course of the years, people will say, oh, well, every time there's 9 consecutive closes lower than the you know, close 4 bars earlier, that's a 9 in DeMarc, so that's a buy. Well, he's always looking for things like that where, you know, it begins to look like people are catching on to what's going on, and there are certain aspects of TD sequential he's modified over the year, not to the actual counts of the 9s or the 13s, but, you know, looking for qualifiers, for example, reverse qualifier, reverse open qualifier, where, you know, you require the market to close lower before it breaks out,
right,
versus just a straight breakout that, oh, everybody say, hey, it broke out above this level, they buy it, you know. So
right. So now, for those people who are just, like, eyes are twirling in their heads, I know that DeMarc indicators were available. And again, you know, some of these can be aligned to something like a Raschke average true range when something gets terribly, quote-unquote, overbought, oversold, exhausted. But, where, you know, I think Bloomberg had those. We used those for a while. I know they're going for a fee-for service. Right. Where else can somebody get – use the Bloomberg ones, right?
Yeah, I use it via Bloomberg. I think Tom also started marketstudies.net so that – now the public can go and get them.
Do you know if there's any other thing like TradeStation or any of these other?
You know, I think that there are some add-ons in TradeStation and a service called CQG that has them available as well.
And if you're mathematically inclined and you know how to write this, I mean, he basically, if I'm not mistaken, shows you how to calculation. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, absolutely. He shows you. I mean, there's no secret formula to the majority of his indicators, but he does consulting for SAC and some of, you know.
Maybe he'll get good tickets to the Mets games then.
Yeah, maybe so.
All right, so there was a. Oftentimes you don't see, at least I don't see, a DeMarc news alert, if you will. Well, about, I think a couple of months ago, there was a news alert that I think either Bloomberg or somebody wrote about that the TD sequential and the exhaustion levels, et cetera, were signaling a setup sell within about a 7 or 8 day period to start, to begin. For the S&P 500, do you remember that?
Right. Yeah, back in I think middle of February.
Yeah. Now that didn't happen. I mean, a couple points went off and it came right back. What do you think that there is something to be said about a change? I mentioned this before, but I'm changing the wording now. Is there a change to the underlying structure of the market with the quantitative easing, currency issues all around the world that are maybe making the exhaustion periods a little bit longer than even longer?
Well, I mean, you know, that's, I'll be honest with you. It's not, you know, Tom, that's, they're his indicators, but I disagreed and wrote about this on Mignonville when he was on CNBC, and for a variety of reasons using his indicators, I disagreed with the way that he was forced to characterize the sell-off that was going to happen. Because if you go back to February 18th, what he was basically talking about was a weekly TD sequential recorded on the S&P 500, and the 13 is there the week of February 18th. So that 13 recorded and the high that week was 1344. There were about 4 weeks of correction. The low was down to 1279. That's a pretty significant correction. I mean, it's, you know, it's enough to, like, if you're leveraged up, that you're going to, you're going to feel that, and you're going to have people, you know, that's going to be problematic for you. But because my focus with using these indicators is longer term, I use it to manage my money and family accounts for, you know, people in qualified plans, for example, and apply them to mutual funds and things like that. You know, I don't care about, I don't care if there's a weekly sell signal that drops 100 points in the S&P 500, because my time frame's longer than that. And I don't, I mean, then that's different. Tom consults with people, and you know, that have much shorter time frames, yeah, using massive amounts of leverage, and they need to know about that. I think that it was unfairly characterized on CNBC because he was forced into a couple of minutes soundbite versus the time, for example, you give me to talk to you about it. But you know, I think the time now is, you know, we can talk about the index, for example, because I think one of the mistakes people are making right now is they're focusing on index movements. You know, like I said, back in 2006 through 2009, it didn't matter what any stock you had in your portfolio did, because you could just look at the S&P 500 and you're going to say, oh, well, the S&P is down 1% today. I know that my portfolio of 50 equal-weighted stocks is down 1%. It doesn't matter what they are. It could be, you know, Weiss Market, could be, you know, any just pick a stock, it's going to be down 1% because the S&P 500 is. It's not like that anymore. Now, even on a day-to-day basis, you go in, if you have a portfolio of stocks that you selected for either a fundamental reason or any technical reason, what the S&P 500 does is, on a given day, is not going to tell you what your portfolio did on that day.
Yeah.
And that's a bullish thing longer term. And that's
right.
My point, is that people need to stop looking at the indexes, stop looking at index funds, and now is the time when you focus on companies that are either doing things that you like, that have viable business models, that, you know, like I said, not every company is AIG out there, but they're mm-hmm. being treated like AIG. That's a very bullish thing.
I think I'm going to disagree with you at one point. And then I think that I agree with you on a short-term basis on the S&P and on the overall market conditions. I do believe, though, when you look at the situation with regards to the overall market sentiment and how futures move things around so dramatically in ETFs, opening and closing hours, if you will, if you're just looking at that for a moment, yeah, you're going to see a lot of correlation. You know, S&P futures down, everything's down. You're going to see kind of these, as I call them, the long tails down, long tails up. But over time, I agree with you that when you look at the longer period rather than just, let's say, half a day, I'm really kind of compressing, you know, half a day and everything moves together, you know, essentially,
right.
You know, you get a big swoon down in the markets, everything sells off. Now, the other thing I'm going to have issue with you, and I'm really, this is going to be grounds for me either, after I said, never having you on the show again or having you on the show every single day. Are you telling me that CNBC sensationalized something? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, here, I mean, let me give you another example of what I'm talking about. Because all I'm trying to do is, I mean, look, from the time that I've been in Minionville and, you know, Todd Harrison and, put together a group of people whose opinion he respected, when we were writing about markets through the time when there was a massive real estate bull market going on and people thought we were crazy, you know, it was hard to get to people to understand that, you know what, it didn't matter what stock you owned, you were in trouble. All I'm trying to do over the last year and a half or a year or so is get to the point for people to understand that, you know what, it's no longer that way. If you are in an index fund, then yeah, you need to watch mm-hmm. what crude oil and gold and the dollar and all that stuff does. But if you're looking at companies on an individual basis, then now is the time to start doing that. I want to give you an example of what I call the negative black swan thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure that a lot of listeners are familiar with Taleb's book, The Black Swan,
mm-hmm.
and you know the power of unpredictable events. Well, unpredictable does not, by definition, mean negative. There an unpredictable event would be a cure for a variety of cancers that's created tomorrow.
Yeah.
An unpredictable event would be an energy source that's discovered that reduces all of our carbon spending, all of our spending on carbon fuels by 50% over the next week.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very unpredictable, but those would not be negative black swan events. But now, because of the name, because of the conditioning of the most recent events, which were the economic crisis, the subprime lending debacle, the housing collapse, people are programmed to think that any black swan that could occur is going to be a negative event. And they're positioning for that, and that's wrong. In my view. And so, you know, here is one example, is that people talk about, well, you know, look, the federal government doesn't have any money, states don't have any money, cities don't have any money, so people are going to wake up and they're not going to have their trash collected, they're not going to have, you know, police service, they're not going to have fire service, all these things, all these lists, all these things that we think we need. A different way to look at that is that, okay, we can't afford that as a city, so what's going to happen is we're going to get together and we're going to figure out ways to take care of those services so that there may be some interruption in it. But you know what? we were spending, you know, $45,000 a year on a dog catcher, and it turns out, yeah, you know, we really don't need a dog catcher. It's $45,000 that have been that's been saved right there. It's a different way of looking at it, is that there's a bullish aspect to everything that's going on now. Yes, there's too much debt. Yes, cities and states are spending money on things that they can't afford. Yes, on a consumer level, we have too much debt, and we're saving it. Our revolving debt actually declined, if you look at the most recent Fed consumer credit survey.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's a negative in the short term because it means less consumption. In the long term, the more that debt declines, the more bullish it's going to be when that savings becomes unlocked later on.
Yeah, it's kind of like what happened in the corporations. I talked time and time again. Again, different situations for different. But what the Fed did, however people characterize it as awful, et cetera, and frankly, I'm pretty appalled about how they spent money so recklessly and overtly. You know, but what ended up happening was that, and again, I don't know 5 years from now what this is going to mean for all of us with taxes and all that, but right now, corporate balance sheets look pretty darn good because they would be able to refinance their debt at ridiculously low levels with an appetite from investors that was amazing. Let me just go back. There's so much to talk about. You know, when you talk about, when you look at charts, there's the concept of bars, right? The idea of you could have a 1 minute, 5 minute, 10 minute, a day, 2 weeks, a month, whatever. And each bar is significant according to, let's say, moving average of those bars, a relationship of each. Now, when DeMar came out with that information on the weekly chart, usually he says within a 4 to 7 period is when the decline starts, right? Something like that.
One to four bars after a 9, and then there's a 12 bar window for the 13
right.
Once that records for the reaction to happen.
So now, if he was looking at the weekly. Now, this changes. This, as they say, a horse of a different color. If he was looking at the weekly chart on February 18th,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the immediate roll would happen somewhere about 4 to 7. I mean, that's a longer time frame, obviously. Anything can happen in 2 months. But then he was kind of a little bit right on that then.
Well, he was. That's my point, is that he was right that, oh, yes, there's a TD sequential sell signal on the weekly chart. But my larger point was that everyone, CNBC, took that to mean, okay, that means that we're set for another leg down to 600.
That's not what
he was saying.
Even Bloomberg screwed that up, because I read that article, and they said that there was a relatively short, very short, there's going to be a 10% decline in the market. I mean, that was, and they didn't even talk about how you have to look at a weekly bar. I'm so sick of the media, I can't tell you. I'm serious. I have this, lately I've been writing, I have the Bloomberg app for the iPad and the iPhone, and I write the guys, I'm like, what is wrong with you? You know, you're writing information that's just half-truths.
Well, here's another thing, is on the monthly chart, we'll get a 9 sell set up in May.
Mm-hmm.
That's a done deal.
Right.
We probably, for it to be perfected in DeMarc terms, we need a high above the February high, which was 1344, and we just haven't really quite gotten there yet. You know, we came within 4 points so far in April. But, okay, next month on the monthly chart, there's going to be a 9 sell set up. After that 9, there should be a 1 to 4 month correction. And I wish I could be more precise than that, but what...
Not to range. Let me just say something. I want you to write this down.
Okay.
And I want you... Sometime in the next 3 years, there'll be a correction.
Well, that's my point. That's my larger point, is that here's what you do. Here's what you do armed with that information. If your time frame is longer than 4 months, and I presume for most people it probably is, unless you're managing a fund and you've got you're running other people's money, and that's a different ballgame. But, you know, on an individual basis, if your time frame is longer than 4 months, then here's what you do over the summer.
Yeah.
Find companies that you like in areas that you think have some kind of growth. Use any kind of fundamental metric you want, any kind of technical metric you want, and follow the ones that outperform the market on the downside.
Mm-hmm.
So that if the market's down 8% over the summer, I don't know what it's going to be, 10%, who knows. If it's down 10%, then as long as your stocks are down less than 10%, then you have relative strength outperformers, and those are typically the ones that perform better when the market correction runs its course.
It's
that simple. It's not rocket science.
All right, and the last question I have for you, real quick, we're going to wrap this up real quick, is silver. Now, are you liking silver? I know you didn't like silver. You're waiting for this thing to crack. I don't remember what happened, if it ever hit your number. Did it ever hit your number on the downside?
No, well, not yet.
Okay. So you got
a while. I still own some physical silver that I'm going to be selling over the next few months, but I've owned it since 2002, and you know, that there was a, that had a great period of outperformance. I didn't expect it to get to $40 yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very bullish on silver over the long term, you know, meaning if I had to pick between, I would not own gold at all. I don't care about gold, but, you know, in DeMarc, we have a sell setup on the yearly chart, on the monthly chart, on the quarterly chart. All these sell signals have accumulated. But, you know, over a 20-year period, you know, silver, I don't expect it to be much below $18. That's where I thought at one point we might get down to 15, but it hasn't. So, you know, but then again, I think
there's plenty of time. If you're looking at yearly time periods, there's plenty of time for that, and we'll see what happens. You're not the guy that did the $1 million put transaction on the July silver, are you? That wasn't you.
No, that's not me.
Yeah, well, that's like some real cojones, I got to tell you. Kevin DePue from Minionville, I really want to thank you for joining us, and we'll talk soon, and we'll put
always
all the links,
my pleasure.
All the links and everything on our website so they can get to all your great writings and discussions.
Okay, thanks so much, Andrew.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by GoToMeeting. Hey, check it out. You can get a 30-day free trial. This is one of the great tools out there because if you want to be able to share your screen and show a presentation to anybody, you know, without flying and doing... GoToMeeting is a great thing. It really is. And I really encourage you to check out what's going on because if you haven't used this and you haven't seen like how it works, you have no idea what I'm talking about. So we use that a lot because we do client presentations and we can actually show a PowerPoint presentation here and you can take a look at what's going on over there. And, you know, what you want to do is you want to be able to kind of use this for free, don't you? Well, GoToMeeting has a 30-day free trial. That's right. Just go to GoToMeeting.com and use the code PODCAST. And you can get a 30-day free, unlimited trial to GoToMeeting. Great software by Citrix. GoToMeeting.com/podcast. And following up a great interview with Kevin DePue, we're going right to a conversation with a very good friend of mine, Fausto Puglisi, who is the creator, the president, the head of Cyber Trading University. I get so many emails on a regular basis of people saying, you know, hey, Andrew, what in the world? How do I learn? How do I figure this all out? And I say, well, you could do this book, but they say, oh, I want to learn about the inside of it. I said, you know what? Check this out. Fausto, my friend Fausto here, he will show you live trading through like this WebEx conference, and he does it right when the markets are live. So, Fausto, you're a lot of fun. You make the trading exciting and understandable. So I appreciate you coming on board today.
Andrew, thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure talking to you and your audience and your fans. But, no, you're right. I mean, listen, I think that's one of the biggest requests people always ask everyone, where'd you find this stock? Where'd you find that stock? And I know we've done a history of these events together. And it's just, it takes obviously someone, the right person, to kind of show you where to look for them, how to find them. But it's not, I mean, there's so many of them out there, Andrew, that you have to understand that not all of them are what we call a tradable stock. I mean, some of them have big spreads.
Yeah.
Some of them are more expensive than others. You don't need to. It's all about risk to reward.
Yeah. So, you know, you and I have talked about this before on this show, and for those people who haven't heard it, just go on the website, The Disciplined Investor, and just go back and just look up Fausto's name and see all the different podcasts that he's done. But one of the things you talk about is, you know, how do you find some names? And a lot of times you want to find the movers, the top and the bottom movers. But I want to ask you something. You know, there's been some discussion that and I have some friends that are traders, you know, and they're really kind of saying, hey, you know what? Trading is a little bit different all of a sudden because there's some different parameters you need to use because the bots and the high frequency traders and all that are involved to a much greater degree than they were a few years ago.
Well, the high frequency traders obviously making it more simpler to trade, and the problem is a lot of people are that I'm like a doctor, but when I teach my people, my students, the thing is you have to adapt what's going on with today's technology, and what's happening is they're making more high frequency traders and making more volatility in the market. The thing is you need special new technology and new software that's out there that they're using more to see those high frequency trades. Things like that are called total view. Now what's happening is I actually had a conference call with NASDAQ. They're going to be, which we're actually, you know, proud to talk about and looking forward to it. They want us to do videos, examples of their total view. What's happening is a lot of the market makers are now not using level two as much, where they're hiding their orders through total view, and you have these high frequency traders running their orders through total view. So you get to see those big block orders out there, which makes it a lot easier. It's common sense, Andrew. Stocks go up and down due to supply and demand. If you see the supply and demand where it is, it gives you more of a game plan, where to get in, where to get out. And I've been seeing that a lot more and more, that people aren't that when I ask that question, they're not using it. But you know, like if I ask the question 3 years ago, I said, who has level two in my classes? Probably 5% would say they know what it is or they have it. Now when I ask, it's about 20, 25%. There's a lot more. But then when I ask people, well, using Total View, now it's like 3 years ago, well, it's only like, 2-3% that know it. Right. So that's why they're going that route.
Well, the thing is, just for those people that are not following this whole thing about level two and all the different techniques in terms of what's going, let me just break this down very quickly. If you go to say, I want to buy 100 shares of this stock, and you go to Schwab or Fidelity, put it into your trading system or your iPhone, however you do your actual executions, and you say, I want to buy 100 shares and I want to buy it at this price or less. Fine. It goes in and it goes through the system. And if your price hits, it hits. The difference is where Faust is talking about is like, hey, wouldn't it be kind of neat if you're doing trading on a more, I guess, on a faster basis and something you need to see a little more closely. Wouldn't it be kind of neat if you could actually see who are the buyers and sellers in there? Is it, is it Goldman that's coming in with a big sell order? Is it, somebody, is there a lot of bids underneath this point? So what happens is you get a total three-dimensional view of what's actually out there on that position. And as a day trader, you want to know where the strength is. You just don't want to know that, the level one, which is basically the bid and ask, the best bid and ask. Level two gives you all the rest of the information. And I guess in a way, this Clearview can be, the next level, level 2B, I guess, or something.
Well, it's actually called level three.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying, it's kind of the one more dimension in, I guess, right?
Right, one more dimension. And kind of break down the levels. It's actually three levels, level one, level two, and level three. Level one is the first level, which everyone can get. It's called the bid and ask. You get that on Google or whatever, any financial website or your online broker. Level two shows you the book, which is like a big chat room of all the price levels and including the brokerage firm's names and the amount of price, the shares they want to buy and sell, and the price they want to buy it for on the bid and ask. So that's the second level. And then the third level is the level where you get to see all the ECNs incorporated into that, which are called electronic communication networks. It's another exchange. And you see the market makers at each price that they're looking to buy it at. So
right.
It makes things a little bit bigger, but and it sounds like it could be a little overwhelming. But what they're doing now is you can aggregate it and consolidate them and just bunch the numbers together so you can actually see more of the supply and demand more clear, which makes it easier to trade.
Right. Yeah, I heard there's a level four coming out. It's designed.
Well, like the G4?
No. It's designed by Raj Rajamathavan, where he the information you get is so clear and clean, you get it direct from the source. Anyway, it's insider trading, obviously. So listen, I just did a class for you, and there was 150 people or something like that. I got some great commentary on that. And
you're always the best. Everyone's always a fan of you when you come on. I mean, literally, I wasn't lying. I mean, every time we do these events all the time, even when we invite a lot of speakers, just like you invite speakers to come and do your podcast,
right.
We invite them to come on our end. And let me tell you, everyone just, you're always a fan favorite. Everyone loves it. You're outgoing. You're entertaining, but you're also very educational, and that's one of the main things why they're there.
I appreciate that. But what's going on? Have you changed your? I haven't really, to be honest with you, I haven't really totally looked lately. What's going on? I know you had the day trading classes and the groups and the individual mentoring and all that. What's going on? What's the hot button these days?
At CyberTradingVersity?
Yeah, I mean, what's the people real hot for?
Well, what's happening now is a lot more people is. What's happening with us is that we're getting very more popular because a lot of the brokerage firms are now realizing that their customers have to be educated. So, we signed a lot of new good deals with a lot of other major brokerage firms in the industry, big ones like Schwab and TradeStation and Thinkorswim. And we're doing more mechanics courses. That's another big thing that's been popular. We're getting more into doing courses with options and Forex now, not just stocks, where obviously my specialty is, day trading and trading stocks. But what I teach, you can apply to everything. I mean, listen, the thing is, if you learn how to be a trader, you can kind of apply it to anything.
Right. So when it comes to the markets these days, though, I mean, we still have that same old, the morning things are hot, afternoon lulls, go to lunch, go to sleep, whatever, and then come back in the afternoons, and after hours are pretty lean but moving, et cetera. What is it that, what things that, I guess the people that want to, day trading always evolves. What is it that now people should be looking to do? It's still the highly liquid, highly moving stocks, right? Where there's a clear depth in there. And then, is there anything else that, I mean, is takeover rumors? Is it, where are you looking for these things these days?
Well, the most important thing that I always tell everyone to start out is, first of all, is getting and understanding the mechanics. Well, first of all, get educated. That's number one. Number two is obviously getting the right execution system that allows you to see things that are going in the market, like having a real-time charting package, having real-time level two. Now, what I tell everyone how to actually go about their day, nothing really has changed. A lot of it is just more discipline and having a game plan. Wake up in the morning. Like I start out at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, an hour before the market opens up. I check pre-market. A lot of the execution systems have something that's called a top 20 list, a top 10, whatever they have. Go through that list. See, I go through specifically percentage gainers and losers. I specifically like to look for inexpensive stocks because you're dealing with less experienced market makers who trade those stocks than the more expensive ones. See what the trend is as the day, as we get closer to the open, you'll notice stocks will start picking up some type of momentum, more volume will kick in, people are going to start jumping on the bandwagon. You know, that's the power of having a specific direct access, you know, execution system. And then what I do is, listen, you know me, I've been trading for years, yeah, over 16 years now. Mm-hmm. I really just jump on that big bandwagon right at the beginning. You know, you make a day's pay, people don't realize it, you don't have to make a lot of money in this market to have a very good living. You know,
right. Well,
for some people.
Well, so I mean, it depends on what your expenses are. It's like just like anything else. And there's a lot of, you know, a lot of fear and emotion that go into it. You just kind of knock that off. But so what else in the world of when you come calling it day trading? I mean, are you using any ETFs these days, or you just stay away from that?
I just stay away from ETFs. We're getting a lot more people now starting, who started out trading options, and now they're starting to realize that, you know, you finally realize that to trade an option, you got to understand how a stock trades. And the reason why they trade options, because, you know, they can't afford the stock, but then they realize, and which is fine. I mean, listen, you know, options are okay, but the problem is that if you don't understand how the stock moves, how are you going to understand when the options are going to move? It'll just put,
right.
It's like more of an indicator. But like all the ETFs, listen, you can make money with them. Everyone has their style,
right,
of what they like. Like you mentioned, rumors of buyouts and earnings and stock splits. You know, me, my favorite, I like the bottom fish, like stocks that get crushed and they bounce from a close.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that, and what I kind of teach everyone, and you know this, is obviously, you know, you went through the program too, what, mm-hmm, 10 years ago, I think it was?
Yeah.
You got to basically just learn how to think as a trader, you know, not have any emotions, don't have any feelings, you know, it's a game. You know, it's like any other game of going out there and playing and putting a quarter in the machine. And, you know, at the end of the day, listen, you know, you look at the high score, you don't feel bad about
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
You know, you can't have any emotions. You have emotions, you know, and you start hoping. This is the failure rate of the industry. That's something that you have to build with experience.
Now, I want everybody to listen to what Fausto just said about something. And Fausto, you don't even know what I'm going to talk about because I just thought of it. And it has nothing to do with actually day trading per se or trading. Think about what he just said. He likes to bottom fish. Now, I want you to listen to this. Think about it. Have you ever wondered when you see those stocks just fall out of the sky right down, and all of a sudden, maybe the next day in the morning, there's a little bit of a bounce of 2%, 3%, 4%, and then it drops over and just keels over and dies again? You know why that happens? Because you got like the guys like Fausto that are looking to pick this up and move it higher and maybe get a little short squeeze on it, and then they're going to blow out of it. So it's not like all of a sudden a major investor came in necessarily. So be careful of that and realize that, you know, if you are looking for the long term with an investment, that if you do see that bounce, remember that it could be, it's possible that it's been recommended. It's possible that somebody is buying to, you know, average down their position, which I don't think is a great idea. But it's also possible that you have a lot of either institutional or day traders that are trying to make a couple of nickels out of the actual trade, right?
Yeah, well, listen, there's one of them right now that I traded today, and I don't know when people are going to be listening to this podcast, but here, I'm just going to give you one example that that happened in the last couple of days. There was a stock symbol, ADES, ADES, I don't even know what the hell the company does.
Yeah, you don't care. You don't care. As long as there's four letters and a price, you're good.
Yeah. The stock in December was $5, and then just in March, it hit a high of like 24.
Wow.
And yeah, the stock has a huge run. And then in one day, it was trending down from like 24 and went to like 21.5, and woke up the next morning, it opened up at 15, went all the way to 10, okay?
Whoops.
So talking about a haircut.
Yeah.
But what happened is, but now the past 2 days, I mean, this is just let you know, it took a drop, you know, and people will see it, they look at it on the long-term chart, but on April 8th, it hit the low, you know, it started, and April 11th, it crashed. So anyway, but in the meantime, in the past 3 days, it's starting to go up now. I mean, it's up 8%, 7% every day. So this is like a bottom fish, you know. For
but,
me,
but here's the beauty. Two things. Number one, or maybe it's not the beauty, it's just the kind of funny differential between what we talk about a lot of times of investing in different ways and what you're doing. You don't know what the stock is. You don't know what the news is, nor do you care. You don't, you know, looking at price valuations. You're not looking at anything. You're not looking at analyst commentary. You don't care. All you're looking at is the dot is on the $5 line now. It was on the $20 line, and it's moving, and I want to be in that direction for a very short period of time and pick up a couple of bucks or cents or whatever on it, right?
That's it. I'm like a subway. I just want to jump on the subway and get off the next exit. And just, right. You know, as long as I'm on the right side, yeah. I made my money, and that's it.
You don't care what town it's in. You don't care what kind of car. As long as it's moving.
It's moving. Listen, at the end of the day, you just want to make money. That's
yeah,
all
I hear
it is.
I understand.
You know, and that's what people have to realize. And I know it's a kind of hard way of thinking of people like, well, you don't even know what industry. Yeah, listen, if a stock is hot in an industry, yeah, I'll look at another stock that's going to follow it's in the same industry. I don't care, you know, if it has anything to do with it. Listen, I'll give you a great example. We all know what happened in Japan. One of the big things that made a lot of stocks fly in Japan was a lot of these cleanup companies.
Right.
They didn't sign no contract. They don't have anything. Just the people like thought, like, all of a sudden, wow, here's a clean company that does that. They're in the industry. Let's jump in. And you know what? A lot of those stocks went up that day, 10%. You know where they're today? They end up losing maybe 15%,
right.
You know, and actually lost money. But for me, I don't care. I ran it for that day's run, and it was the day's over. You know, and it was the day's pay for me, and you know, I move on.
Yeah, I hear you. Listen, everybody, I want you to go check it out because so many people, I got a lot of emails recently about, you know, educational issues and all that. So if you want to check out Cyber Trading University, and by the way, you know, we don't get paid by any of these guys. They don't advertise with us or anything like that. I just think they're a great resource to have. And I think if nothing else, one of the things that I really think is kind of neat is, you know, if you haven't had an education or at least a taste of what the markets are like from the aspect of the underlying bids and asks, not only just on the level one, but, you know, what's going on, the mechanics behind it all. I think you're doing yourself a disservice when you buy a stock and you don't know why the thing is moving in terms of the stock movement for that moment in the day. I'm not talking about, you know, a long-term situation here. It's just kind of interesting if you know that. It's one more piece of the puzzle that you can educate yourself on so that you can, you know, be a much better investor. And that's, you know, really what we're trying to, you know, help people with here. This. So anyway, any other interesting stories that you have lately or what else?
No, I mean, other than, you know, listen, it's, thank God spring's here.
Yeah, I hear you. And the subway is still moving until they is told. Otherwise, you're on and off the E-train. That's a great thing, you know?
That's all you need to do. That's all you need to do, Andrew. And that's what kills me. And like you said, if anyone does want to find out more about it, listen, Andrew obviously invites me to come here because he knows it's an important value that everybody should learn. And one of the things that makes me very different than most people out there is I'm one of the very, very few people that trade and show you during the market hours. Like I just did, we do an event every 2 weeks. We show people, you know, we do a 2-day free course. It's live trading. I personally do it, show you what it's like to get in and out of it. And at least you know what you're getting yourself involved in. You know, like I tell everyone, you know, I do a lot of speakings. I'm going to be in Toronto in 2 weeks. I'm actually doing a big event there. I got another one in Dallas that's coming up. And, you know, the thing I always show everyone is, like, listen, you need to see what's going on in the market. You need someone to show you what it's like because it might not be for you, you know, and that's what kills me. They go out there, and I like to relate trading to cars because it's like going out buying a car and, you know, like you just buy it because you got a driver's license, you know, or you know, you're sick, so you think you just walk down some, you know, you go to CVS and just pick something off the wall. Say, hey, this is a medication, maybe this will help me get better. You know, you got to know what you're doing. You got to have a game plan, know what you're buying before you do it. And it's not about, like you said, fundamentals or technicals. You can throw that stuff out the door. You got to just follow the money.
Yeah, again, and this is much different than what we talk about how we do things. I mean, sometimes we do trading, obviously, but, you know, and particularly in a sideways market, you want to do some of that. But, you know, this is a whole different animal. Anyway, Fausto Puglisi, Cyber Trading University, really appreciate you coming on board and kind of telling us a few things that's going on. And I think that just, folks, do me a favor, just check it out, because if you want to just kind of like, just again, another tool in the toolbox. It's all we're talking about here. All right, buddy, be well. Enjoy the spring.
Thanks a lot, Andrew, for having me. And everyone else wants to find out, just visit the site. There's a link right on the button up on the top left, learn for free. Right on the homepage, we just updated our whole website just recently. Just put your email, we'll get you registered for the next upcoming event, and you'll watch me trade, and hopefully Andrew will be there with us.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, bye-bye. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of the guest side of things. And I had a couple of questions. I actually answered a lot of questions by email this week. We're still trying to get John Perkins to talk about some of the things that are going on around the world. And we'll probably have that very shortly. I don't think there's going to be a problem with that. You know, with some really cool charts I was looking at the last few weeks when it comes to the value of the dollar over the last number of years. I don't know if you've seen the long-term value of the dollar and how over, it took about 5 or 6 years to deflate the dollar over the 2000-ish to the 2000, we'll call it 7 time period. And then it jumped right back up when the fear happened. And it took almost pretty much about maybe less than a year to get it back down all the way down. And this is what really is driving the markets, the gold, silver, commodities, you know, market right now. And I got to tell you something. It would not surprise me that if there is a hiccup in global economics, if we do continue to see the situation with inflation come under pressure and the countries out there and many countries looking to fight it as they have so, you know, fastidiously, I think that there's going to be a big surprise when it comes to the gold, silver, and commodity plays, particularly when it comes to gold and silver. When you look at the precious metals, I think that, you know, a lot of people think that the markets are going to totally crash when it comes to currencies and particularly the U.S. dollar, and they're looking for a safe haven. I just still wonder if that's really going to be the case, and if it is the case, I hate to say this, but who cares? You know, who cares if the dollar just goes to zero? Aren't we all in really, really bad shape no matter what happens? I mean, it's not going to matter that you had some gold, I don't think, because the world is going to be an absolute disaster. Kind of like, you know what? I want to save myself in the event of a nuclear war. Well, there's a nuclear war that just obliterates everybody. Why do I want to be here anyway? I don't know. I don't know if you have that kind of thinking, but it just sounds a little kind of creepy. Anyway, I want to thank you for joining me again. Episode number 208 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll be back next week with some great information, great guests. I wish you a profitable and a successful week.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.